It's time now for North Star Sports, your source for the hottest sports takes in the business. Here's your host, Owen Ely.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to North Star Sports. I'm your host, Owen Ely. You can follow me on Twitter at OwenElyMN. You also can follow North Star Sports on Twitter at NorthStarMIN. Be sure to check out our website at NorthStarSports.media. And welcome to the show, everyone. We got a great one for you today here on this Saturday, September 26th, as we get set to preview UFC 253 Adesanya versus Costa, which will take place on Fight Island in Abu Dhabi, UAE. Good to be back with you guys here. Obviously doing the preview with a little bit of a shotgun start here. Did not expect to be doing it at 11 p.m. here on Friday night, but better late than never. Would have preferred to let it breathe a little bit, but been busy with work and some other work-related stuff. But either way, we're here, and I'm excited. I'm excited for this pay-per-view, arguably one of the best pay-per-views of 2020, at least on paper, obviously. And I'm very excited because it's really kicking off the fall and winter season here for the UFC. Obviously, 254 will take place next month, and obviously that's going to be, you know, incredibly exciting with Gaethje and Khabib, and we got Figgy and Cody Garbrandt at some point. I think that's at 255, and then 256 as well. So the UFC typically always stacks their pay-per-views and cards towards the end of the year. There's kind of that bump right around International Fight Week, but I am really excited. And it kind of starts here with 253. It kind of feels like it's been a long time since we had a pay-per-view. I think there's been six fight nights since we've had a pay-per-view, which is probably definitely two more than the usual interval between pay-per-views. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm not going to waste any time here. We'll get right into the prelim opener here. it's a light heavyweight fight here between Kadys Ibragimov and Danilo Marquez. Ibragimov is 8-3, Marquez 9-2. We look at the odds for this fight. These odds coming from Oddshark. Ibragimov is the -160 favorite. Now, the problem for me when I'm looking at Ibragimov is he is on a 3-fight losing streak all in the UFC. He's never won a fight in the UFC. And it's always tough to pick someone who's never had a win in the company. Danilo Marquez, I believe he's making his UFC debut. He is making his debut. They also kind of just found this guy on the street somewhere. He's got a win over he's got a win one fight ago over Mark Polamino, who's 0-16. That was back in 2017. So I feel pretty confident that Kadys Ibragimov is going to win this one. There has to have been a reason why the UFC signed him, and they literally just found Danilo Marquez. Maybe he was already in Abu Dhabi, and they just found him on a street corner or something. I have no idea. So I don't feel great about it because he's never won a fight, but in the UFC. But we'll go Kadys Ibragimov. I'm not going to give a method or a round because I do not give a fuck about either of these fighters. Moving on here, second fight on the prelims. It's a heavyweight fight here between Jeff Hughes and Juan Espino. A little bit of an interesting fight here. We look at the odds. Espino is the pretty heavy -300 favorite. Forgot if I said Espino is 9-1, Hughes 10-3. Espino, I believe he's 39. This was a guy who won. He might have won the last season of The Ultimate Fighter. It was one of those final ones before they went on this little hiatus. He's 39. 6'4", 255. He has not fought since his win on the Ultimate Fighter season 28, a win over Justin Frazier. So this one's a little interesting. I remember I was going through the seasons of the Ultimate Fighter, and I came across his name. I was like, what the fuck? I've never heard of this guy. Never heard of him. And I believe there was like nothing on the internet except for like a local article from Spain, where he's from. And I had to Google Translate it, and I still couldn't even find a good reason as to why he has not been fighting the last 2 years. But essentially, it boils down to injuries. So this is interesting. I mean, a talented heavyweight. I don't know how much stock you put in winning the Ultimate Fighter. You know, seasons, I don't know, 24 to 28. You know what I mean? Those last couple of ones were not good seasons. They were not good seasons. They did not produce anybody in the UFC. And most of the international seasons also just sucked as well. For my money, the last good season of the Ultimate Fighter that I can think of, it probably was the McGregor-Faber Team USA versus Team Europe. That was probably the last good season of the Ultimate Fighter. The rest of them have just, I mean, they've been entertaining a little bit, I guess, but just they don't produce anybody anymore. And I don't think. You know, they're talking about bringing back the Ultimate Fighter. I still don't think it'll produce anybody because Contender Series is just so much better. It's just so much more viable at producing immediate UFC fighters. You know, why would I want to go to the Ultimate Fighter house, fight fucking five times in 2 months just for a 1 in 16 chance at getting a UFC contract when I could just go on the Contender Series, fight one night, and I could make it in? It's just, you know, I don't think the Ultimate Fighter will ever come back unless they make, or it'll come back to popularity. I mean, technically they could just bring it back, you know what I mean, to the seven people that would tune in. But I would have to imagine they'd make some big changes for it to kind of regain its popularity. And then Jeff Hughes, I want to say he's from Minnesota, which obviously I like. Says he's from Canton, Ohio, but I want to say he was from, he fought out of like St. Paul or something. I don't know. This is a guy who has not won his three fights in the UFC. It's two losses and a no contest, in which I believe he gouged the fuck out of Todd Duffy's eyes in his return. So we'll go with Spino. I guess we'll just bet that he's healthy, I guess, because he took a fight and he's showing up. So, I mean, he must be healthy enough to throw a punch. So we'll go with Spino on this one. Not really for any other reason than his winning of the Ultimate Fighter, because I got nothing to say about either fighter outside of that. Moving on here on the prelims, we have a 205-pound bout here between William Knight and Alexa Kamer. This is a really good one. This is a really good one, and I kind of like when the UFC does fights like this. I don't always. But I kind of like when they just throw two young guys out there and just, you know, go fight. Instead of, you know, I think it's generally best to have a younger fighter taking on an older fighter. And that doesn't even really mean age. Just more where they are in their career. Because I think, you know, well, William Knight's making his UFC debut here on Fight Island. But he is 32 years old. And Alexa Kamer, I want to say he's 25. So obviously they're not the same age, but they're exactly at the same point in their careers. Like, they're both like very, very early on in their UFC career. But I kind of like this. Both of these guys coming off of the Contender Series. Kamer, he did make his UFC debut back in January, won a unanimous decision over Justin Ledet. I remember that one being a little bit, not a stinker, but a little, there's stuff to work on for Kamer. I don't think it was a glowing performance from what I can remember. I don't remember a whole lot from the fight other than, I know I had a lot of hype on Kamer coming into the UFC, and I don't remember him holding that up in his first fight. Not that, you know, one fight makes your entire career, obviously. And William Knight, I want to say probably about a month ago, he won on the Contender Series. Earlier in September, knocked out Cody Brundage. He was also on the Contender Series back in 2019. His only loss came to Tufan Nchukwi, the guy who got a contract as well. Honestly, it might have been the same fight card as William Knight about a month ago. So that's interesting. And I don't know. I'm going to go Kamer on this one. The experience level in the pros is about the same. Kamer's younger. He's strong as shit. William Knight's strong as shit as well. Certainly a guy who can deliver a knockout. But I don't know. His fight versus Cody Brundage, he was really getting beat. He was really getting beat for the majority of that fight. Obviously, it only lasted, until a little past the first round. You know what I mean? And winning is the only thing that matters at the end of the day. But he did not look super awesome doing so. So I'm going to go Kamer on this one. All right. Oh, and the odds for that one have Kamer as the -165 favorite. I forgot to mention that. All right. Moving on here in the featherweight division, we have Shane Young taking on Ludovit Klein. Klein is 16-2. Young is 13-4. Klein is the -125 favorite. Yeah, I don't know anything about either of these fighters. Shane Young, he's 27. He's from New Zealand. He has been in the UFC for kind of a surprisingly long amount of time for his record. He's been here since November of 2017. Actually made his UFC debut versus Alexander Volkanovski. That's hilarious. That was on the Verdum versus Tibura fight in Sydney, Australia. Since then, he's got a win over Rolando D and Austin Arnett. Rolando D is an interesting story that I cannot mention. All of his like family history and what his dad did, but you should certainly look up Rolando D. And while we're talking about questionable sports athletes. I want to say today is Jose Fernandez Day. Today is the day that 4 years ago, Jose Fernandez killed two people while being coked up and drunk on a boat and crashed into some rocks. And it's very interesting to see the reaction from... I was going to mention this in housekeeping, although I didn't really want to mention it because I don't want to get in trouble. But if you're not entirely familiar with Jose Fernandez, you should look him up. You should look him up, draw your own conclusions. I don't want to be here just, spouting my opinions, you know what I mean? You should, Google, maybe Bing, I don't know, is Ask Jeeves still a thing? I mean, get to your local search engine and, just type in Jose Fernandez. And you know what? So many people talk about Jose Fernandez, but I want you to do me a solid. When you're typing in Jose Fernandez, be sure at the end to include the phrase toxicology reports and draw some conclusions, because maybe not the angel everybody's saying he is. He only was driving the boat that killed those two people for like 15 seconds. The other 24 years he was alive, the other 23 years, 364 days and handful of minutes, he was an angel, but those 15 seconds don't define him, so we can't be mad at a guy who throws a baseball really fast, damn, he can throw a slider really good though. I don't know, man. I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to make people mad. Don't want to trigger people just for the sake of triggering people. But yeah, Jose Fernandez, I'm not losing any sleep that yeah, whatever. Jose Fernandez. What can you say? Good old Jose Fernandez. All right, I'm going to stop before I get in trouble. The fuck was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Shane Young and Ludovit Klein. Don't know anything about them. Ludovit Klein, he's making his UFC debut. He is from Slovakia. I do not watch Slovakian MMA, so I don't know anything about the guy. He's on, you know, he's got an impressive record. But other than that, I don't know anything about Ludovic Klein. So I'm gonna go with Klein though on this one. He's the slight favorite, and I assume that's for a reason because money's involved, and you know, you gotta follow the money trail with stuff like this. So when you don't know, you just defer to the money lines. So we'll go Ludovic Klein on this one. All right. We have a stunning matchup here in the welterweight division. An absolutely stunning matchup here on the prelims. Diego the Nightmare Sanchez taking on Jake Matthews here in the welterweight division. Sanchez 30-12. Matthews 16-4. The odds shark odds have Jake Matthews as the -950 favorite. He's the biggest favorite on the card. -950 favorite. That's a little bit significant. But yeah. The only thing that the only nightmare in this equation is the fans watching this fight. The only nightmare in this situation is, you know, the latter half of Diego Sanchez's career. That's truly a nightmare. That'll really give you, you know, the cold sweats at night thinking about the last 10 fights for Diego Sanchez. That'll make you that'll give you the Sunday scaries. That's gonna give everybody the Sunday scaries when they wake up on Sunday morning after UFC 253. That's truly frightening. Diego Sanchez is a maniac. This guy's crazy. It is my personal opinion that Diego Sanchez is a walking CTE case. This man has severe brain damage, and I don't, I crack some jokes here on the show, but I say this with a completely straight face. Diego Sanchez has a lot of CTE. He has a lot of brain damage, in my opinion. It's pretty evident. I'm not a doctor. You can't really diagnose CTE unless the person's dead. And again, I'm not a doctor. Yeah, listen to an interview with Diego Sanchez and tell me that guy is not full of head trauma. You know what I mean? I don't say that necessarily to be funny. Actually, I don't say that he has brain damage to be funny. It's just kind of a fact in my mind. I guess technically an opinion because I don't want to, you know, have any weird stuff happen. But yeah, he should not be fighting. He should absolutely not be fighting. I'm not looking forward to this fight at all. He's coming off of a win over Michel Pajeda, a win in which he was getting his ass beat and took the cheap way out. I don't know, whatever. It was an illegal knee, but definitely didn't really land. So, Diego Sanchez trying to quit in that fight, which, you know, not going to fault them. I mean, if that's a thing in the rule books that you can use, whatever, man, but, you know, you're not a nightmare if you look for the easy way out and got smoked by Michael Chiesa. He'll still beat some of the worst fighters in the UFC. He'll still beat Mickey Gall. I mean, anybody could beat Mickey Gall in the UFC. Beat Craig White, but, I mean, Jesus, a lot of red on his Tapology pages, and, this man should absolutely not be sanctioned to be in a cage. I don't know which athletic commission... I guess Abu Dhabi has their own commission, or maybe they don't even have a commission. I have no idea how that actually works over there. But shame on whatever commission is allowing Diego Sanchez to continue fighting, because that is not cool. Not cool, guys. So obviously I'm going with Jake Matthews on this one. It's not even close. He's only 26 years old. It's crazy to think he's been in the UFC since 2014. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, he was one of the youngest guys in the UFC at the time. Must have been like 19 or 20. Probably 20, because otherwise I think he would have been the youngest if he was 19, because he'd be right up there with like Nate Diaz and Joe Lozon? Not Dan Lozon. Yeah, one of the Lozons. But either way, I mean, he's on a 2-fight winning streak. I mean, not crazy impressive. I mean, most of his wins are by decision lately, but you know what I mean? We'll go Jake Matthews on this one, and I feel very confident in saying that, although this is not the mailman's lock of the week. It is not. It should, you know what, it should be because, but you know, I'm going to let you guys in on a little insider secret. Obviously, we don't just pick the heaviest favorite for the mailman's lock of the week. We want the lock of the week to be controversial. We want it to get clicks and views. And if we just choose the obvious answer, which would be Jake Matthews, well, that's not very interesting. I mean, you could have just Googled it yourself and told yourself that Jake Matthews is a lock of the week. But you know what I mean? We don't do that. We don't do that. All right, moving on here on the main event of the prelims. It's a lightweight fight here between Brad Riddell and Alex Da Silva. Alex Da Silva is 21-2, Riddell 8-1. We look at the odds, Shark odds. They have Riddell as the heavy minus 335 favorite. This is interesting. I'm a big fan of City Kickboxing. Did not know who Brad Riddell was until he made his UFC debut. Well, obviously, I mean, I don't watch Australian MMA, but, you know, maybe people assumed I did. I don't know. It looks like a really legit prospect. You know, this was a guy who was, I don't know if he was a striking coach at City Kickboxing, but I remember watching, like, some interview with him, and, you know, he's been a striking coach for a really long time. I know it was in Thailand, but I don't know if it was with Tiger Muay Thai or what it was, but obviously a really good striker. Had the win over Jamie Malarkey. That's the one I mentioned at 243, and then a split decision win over Magomed Mustafayev in February. I want to say that was the one in... of course, that was the one in New Zealand, obviously. I was going to say Rio Rancho, but that would make no sense. Alex Da Silva, gaudy record, 21-2. That's very impressive. He's only 24 as well. He had one loss. So he came into the UFC 20-1, and lost to Alexander Yakovlev. Got a rebound win over Rodrigo Vargas. I'm going to go with Riddell on this one. I'm very intrigued by the future of Alex Da Silva, just given the sheer number of fights he's had at such a young age. But I'm going to go Riddell here. I mean, City Kickboxing is not the best in the world, because for my money, like I always say, the best in the world is TriStar and Firas Sahabi. But it's probably the second best in the world, which ain't too shabby, considering it's the entire fucking planet. So we'll go Riddell on this one. Moving on here to the main card. On the main card opener, we have a featherweight fight here between Hakeem Dawodu and Zubara Tukagov. Fucking Russian names always trip me up. I need pronouncers. This is an interesting one. It's going to be a good fight. It is. I don't think anybody will give a shit about it, but I kind of like that it snuck its way onto the main card, because that's going to be a great way to get a lot of people, a lot of eyes on this fight here. I think Zubaira was the one who punched Conor McGregor in the octagon when there was that skirmish there with Khabib. Might have been one of Khabib's other Russian buddies, but I could have swore Zubaira was one of them. He definitely was there. Now, Hakeem Dawodu, he's 29, he's from Canada. People from Canada are really excited about Hakeem Dawodu. He's on a 4-fight winning streak. Came into the UFC, he lost very early in the first round in March of 2018 to Danny Henry, and then a unanimous decision victory over Austin Arnett, a decision win over Kyle Bochniak, and a head kick knockout in round 3 of Yoshinori Horii, and a split decision win over Julio Arce. A little bit concerning that two of his last 3 have been split decision wins, because whenever you leave it to the judges, that is just a recipe for disaster, because referees, a lot of them, or judges, excuse me, well, referees as well, to be honest, but judges can be pretty incompetent in this sport. You know what I mean? I understand. Listen, you know, I agree with the fighters. Like when fans say, "Oh, you shouldn't have left it to the judges." Well, like Michael Bisping says, they're not trying to leave it to the judge. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying as hard as they can. Like, oh, guess I'll just let this one go to the judges. That's obviously not how it works. You know what I mean? But you know, if it does go to the judges, it is true. I mean, I guess I can agree with both sides. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's a little concerning. And you know, this is a pretty big step up in competition. You know, Zubaira, I think we all think of Islam Makhachev as like a super scary Russian that nobody wants to fight. You know what I mean? Who just can never climb the rankings because nobody above him is willing to take him on. And that is true. That is true for Islam Makhachev. But Zubaira is kind of like Islam light on this one. Like, you know, Zubaira is kind of like the featherweight version of Makhachev. I mean, there's not a whole lot of people, you know, burning up Mick Maynard's phone to quote John Anik, to try to get a fight with Zubaira Takugov. You know what I mean? So this will be a good one. The one fight that really stands out to me for Hakeem Dawodu is the one versus Yoshinori Hori. I remember that one. That was at 240. I don't know. He didn't look that good. Now, the thing with that fight was Hori has a really weird... It's so weird because Hori got cut after that fight. He only had one fight in the UFC, and it's so weird. He has such a weird style. This is how you know he had a really weird style. He has such a weird style that I committed his style to memory after only seeing three rounds of him fighting in his only fight in the UFC. Yoshinori Hori's style is fucking amazing. His style, he would be a goddamn world champion if he was fighting two-round fights. So much energy, so much circling around, amazing footwork, but he just gassed himself out and eventually got knocked out by Dawodu. So, I mean, there is legitimate hype around Dawodu, but again, I don't know. This is a real, real step up in competition, which is why I'm taking Zubaira Tukagov in this one. He's only 29. You know, he's 1-1-1 in his last three, but I don't know, it was a split decision to Renato Moicano. That was in 2016. He didn't get another fight until the UFC 242 Khabib versus Poirier card. That one was a split decision draw, versus Lerone Murphy, who was making his UFC debut. Now, we later found out how good Murphy was. Turns out Murphy's, you know, actually a pretty legitimate fighter. But, you know, I mean, he could make excuses, but, I mean, come on. That was 40 months out of the octagon, and he comes back, and, you know, there was a little bit of ring rust, and then comes back and knocks out Kevin Aguilar. I think a guy who was a champ in LFA or RFA or whatever the fuck they called it at the time. So, you know, he's back on track, and I'll go Zubaira on this one. All right, moving on here in the women's bantamweight division, we have a fight here between Ketlin Vieira and Sajara Eubanks. We consult the North Star Sports rankings here, and you'll see that Ketlin Vieira is ranked at number 8. Sajara Eubanks at number 14. I'm not a big fan of Sajara Eubanks. She is coming off of a very quick turnaround here, so she just won. It'll be, 2 weeks earlier over Julia Avila. That's the best win of her career. Mostly because she doesn't have a lot of wins in her career, but Avila was ranked number 15, according to North Star Sports. Actually, no, 14 at the time. Now she's 15. And I don't know. I mean, Ketlin Vieira, I want to say, was ranked... Well, now, we didn't do rankings at the time, because this was like a few years ago, before North Star did them. But Vieira, I think she was ranked as high as like 3 or 4. So she had that split decision win over Kat Zingano. She was 10-0. This was in March of 2018. She doesn't fight for 21 months. Comes back, gets knocked out in the first round by Irene Aldana. And we haven't seen her since. We haven't seen her since. So it's been about 10 months, just about 10 months since we've seen Vieira. So, you know, there's a lot of questions here. I mean, this was a very legitimate prospect, a very, very good BJJ fighter. Someone who, I mean, I don't think she would have, well, shit, you never know in some of these women's divisions, but, you know, probably was one win away from a title shot after the win over Zingano, and, you know, I wouldn't say falling off because it was just one loss, but, you know, the loss coupled with inactivity, it's kind of like, well, people have forgotten about her. She's almost, well, you know, apples to potatoes comparison here, but, you know, it's, she's kind of like the Santiago Ponzinibbio of the women's bantamweight division. So there's many question marks here. I'm going to go with Vieira on this one. I'm going to side with talent. I'm going to sign with someone who actually belongs in the UFC. I'm not impressed with Tajara Eubanks at all. She had a good last performance. I don't think Avila fought, you know, her best fight and, you know, whatever. I mean, there's levels to this game, and I think that Tajara Eubanks is about to find that out here. And I'm not going to go by finish, though, because Eubanks is tough. I will say that. So, and obviously not a whole lot of finishes on the lower weight classes. So we'll go Vieira by unanimous decision on this one. Moving on here in the featured bout. Kind of a gross featured bout, if I'm being honest here. It's men's flyweight, and that's all I have to say. I mean, I could just stop right there, and it would make my point. But Kai Kara-France and Brandon the Raw Dog Royval, which, I mean, that's a very good nickname. I respect that. I'm rooting for him in this one, although I don't know if he's going to win this one. Oh, but damn it, I forgot the odds as well for the Vieira fight. So Vieira's the minus 200 favorite. I forgot to say that. Kara-France is the minus 240 favorite here versus Royval. This is why it's so tough to figure out where flyweight fighters are. Number one, we don't do rankings at North Star Sports for flyweights because, you know, it's not a real division. But Kara-France, I mean, there's a lot of hype around him. People are really excited about him. He's got a big fan base and obviously comes from, you know, that city kickboxing there in Auckland. Coming off of a win over Tyson Nam, which tells me nothing, had the loss to Brandon Moreno. But then before that, three UFC wins over Elias Garcia, Haulian Paiva, and Mark De La Rosa, the man with the worst nickname in the UFC. I don't know. Not a lot of good wins in there. You know what I mean? Like, those are not really big names. I mean, Paiva, Haulian Paiva, I'll give him that one. I mean, I guess that's probably his best win to date. And then Brandon Royval, I mean, a really small sample size with this guy, you know, just the win over Tim Elliott, in which he was getting dominated until Elliott gassed out, and, you know, he was able to choke him there late in the second round. It's tough, man, because I'm not super high on Kara-France, but there's just not enough of a sample size in the UFC that I've seen for me to pick Royval, so I'm going to go Kai Kara-France on this one by unanimous decision. All right, now this leads us here to the co-main event of the evening. It is Dominic Reyes taking on Jan Blachowicz. Reyes is 12-1, Blachowicz 26-8. We look at the odds here. Reyes is the minus 285 favorite. And we go to the North Star Sports rankings. Dominic Reyes is the number one contender. Obviously, the belt's vacant. And Jan Blachowicz is the number three fighter here in the light heavyweight division. This is a good one. This is a good one. And I just want to start here by saying I have Jan Blachowicz winning this one. I think Jan Blachowicz is going to be... We're going to live in a world where John Jones is not in jail. He's not doing drugs, at least that we know of. He's still active in the UFC... And yet, Jan Blachowicz will be the light heavyweight champ. That's the type of world we're living in. That's the type of year 2020's been. Jan Blachowicz is going to be the light heavyweight champ. I think he's really turned a corner. He really has. You know, this was a guy, he had a good amount of hype coming in the UFC. I want to say he was champ over in KSW. Comes over, he beats Ilir Latifi. Then he loses to Jimmy Manoa and Corey Anderson. Rebounds with a win, two more losses to Gustafson and Cummins. Easily could have been cut. Easily could have been cut there. I mean, you lost four of your last five. Now, these are all to really good fighters. Now, that's not, you know, again, I say that all the time. It's not like it's a good excuse. You know what I mean? But, I mean, Manoa, very good knockout artist. Anderson, you know, that was a bad loss. I mean, we realized how good Corey Anderson was. But I think he got beat like 29-25. Like, he got just smoked. He got out-wrestled. Something fierce. And then, obviously, Gustafson. And, you know, Patrick Cummins was a little underrated. But, again, you know, it's Patrick Cummins. Then he goes on to win 7 of his next 8. Four-fight winning streak. Clark Cannoneer, that one aged really good. Got back the win versus Jimmy Manoa. Win over Nikita Krylov. Look at how good Krylov has looked in his second stint in the UFC. You know, got the win over Johnny Walker. He did get knocked out in February of 2019, so not that long ago. He did get knocked out by Thiago Santos, but he rebounds, knocks out Luke Outcold. He folded up Luke Rockhold like a cheap lawn chair. Got a split decision win over Jacare Souza, which I didn't watch that one because I think I was calling a football game. By all accounts, that was a little bit of a snooze fest, but from what I saw, it was pretty, well, not pretty evident, but, you know, Jan won that fight. And then knocks out Corey Anderson in a really bad way, because Corey Anderson is dumb enough to throw a leg kick when he's standing 2 inches in front of Jan Blachowicz and his right hook. Jan suddenly discovered his power. I don't know what happened. He had one knockout in the UFC. He had one knockout in his career, and he's got two in his last three. Two KOs, not just TKOs. So I don't know, Jan. Dude, he fucking figured it out. I don't know what's going on here, but you know, a little bit of a major career resurgence here for Jan. Dominic Reyes, it's easy to look at just his performance versus John Jones, which he absolutely lost. He won rounds 1 and 2 and lost rounds 3 through 5. So, you know, didn't beat John Jones. But I don't know. I mean, it's... Let's look at the whole body. I'm not saying Dom isn't a good fighter. Obviously, he's a really good fighter, and he might be champion, you know, in 24 hours from now. But, like, okay, the Jones fight was awesome. You fought up to the level of your competition. That was, you know, a fight for the ages. But you beat a super, super washed Chris Weidman. You technically won a split decision over Volkan Uzdemir, but everybody knows you lost that fight. There's no fucking way. You know what? Let me pull up MMA decisions here, because I really want to see that. As my stupid fucking computer, I click to open one tab, and it opens three for me. So that's, God, never get an HP. Never get an HP. But I think everybody thinks that's bunk. I don't think people actually believe he beat Uzdemir. Okay, maybe some people, probably like a third of the people thought that Reyes won. Although just as many people thought Uzdemir won 30-27 as thought Reyes won 29-28. I don't know. Again, I'm not saying he's not a good fighter, but okay, you beat Ovince St. Preux, you beat Jeremy Kimball. The win over Cannoneer, obviously that's a very good one, but Jan's got a win over Cannoneer as well, and I don't know, you got lucky because you beat a super washed legend of the sport in Chris Weidman, and you know what I mean? I guess he deserved to get the title shot because, you know, he definitely fought his ass off, but I'm not super sold on Dominic Reyes as being like, oh, wow, this guy's a complete dominator out there. I mean, not really. Not really. At least not yet. He might be. But I don't really know. But I don't know. I am going Jan Blachowicz on this one. I just think the experience, you know, he's old, but he's not too old. You know what I mean? He's right in the peak of his career, probably at the later end of his peak, but he's definitely peaking right now. It's now or never for Jan Blachowicz. The power is connecting. I mean, it'd be crazy to think he just developed power, but I guess what I mean when I said that earlier is, you know, he's actualizing the power. I mean, obviously, you know, he's didn't gain any muscle mass, but it's, you know, he's putting it in the right spot to send people to the shadow realm, and you know what I mean? I can't bet against the legendary Polish power. I mean, that's just Jan Blachowicz. He's got that legendary Polish power. He eats those pork chops and those beans, and I don't even know what else he said. Fucking Brussels sprouts or something. I don't know. Yams. No. Beets. It was beets. Pork chops and potatoes and beets, and that's what gives you the legendary Polish power. So Jan Blachowicz would never fucking lie to us. You know, that is the key to power of the legendary Polish variety. And, I don't know, he's also got some supernatural shit going for him. Because I watched that, I wasn't UFC, maybe it was his own camera crew. But I watched that little mini doc of him. Oh, just a video, not a fucking mini doc, just a video of him, you know, explaining why he goes back to the scene in the forest where he found a guy hang himself, and he goes back and touches the noose for good luck before each of his fights, and apparently he's 9-1 since he's done that. That's very fucking creepy. Very creepy. I don't mess with supernatural shit, and, you know, Jan's fucking around with it, and, you know, it's working for him. He's got that good juju on his side, but I don't know, man. I'm not gonna... If I'm Dom Reyes... You know what I mean? It's starting to turn into that, like, Key and Peele sketch with the MMA fighters where, you know, they get the crazy fighter and he's like, what the fuck? I mean, he knows we're just kidding, right? Like, if I'm Dom Reyes, I'm not... You want me to fight Jan Blachowicz? This guy's fucking rubbing his fucking grubby fingers over, you know, a dead man's noose. I'm not gonna fucking mess with that. Like, what is he also cutting off the heads of chickens and, you know, fucking spirit cooking? You know what I mean? I'm not going to mess with Jan Blachowicz. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm for real going with Jan Blachowicz on this one. And then moving on here to the main event of the evening. It's for the middleweight championship of the world. It's Israel, the last stylebender, Adesanya, taking on Paulo, the Eraser Costa. Both fighters are undefeated. Adesanya is 19-0. Costa is 13-0. North Star Sports rankings. Costa's obviously the number one contender. This is going to be a good one. We look at the odds here for Odds Shark. Israel Adesanya is the -185 favorite. But I'll tell you what, I disagree with Odds Shark. I say Paulo Costa is the mailman's lock of the week.
It's time now for the mailman's lock of the week.
So there you have it. Paulo Costa is the mailman's lock of the week. Yeah, I really think he's going to get it done. I really do. Paulo Costa, he's just... Dude, this is a fucking heavyweight fighting at middleweight. This is a guy who walks around at like 225. You know what I mean? Like, this is a very, very big boy. You look at Costa on the scale, looks like a completely different human being. That probably was not a very fun weight cut for him. But, you know, he made weight. He's here to fight. And I don't know how much longer we'll see him at middleweight because that seems like a hellacious cut. But this guy's power, and I understand power. It's not just power. You know, power is overrated. You know, you talk, oh, why will Ngannou beat Stipe? Oh, the power. Everybody always talks about power. Generally, it's not a super great talking point. Generally, it's a little overrated. But fuck me, Paulo Costa's got some real fucking sledgehammers for hands. You look at what he did to Johnny Hendricks. Oh my God, that should have been fucking criminal. That should have been criminal. He gets in your grill. He fights in a refrigerator, you know, when he's slinging these shots at times. And man, he's just fucking throwing with really bad intent. I mean... Oh, watch the finishing sequence. Watch like the last 45 seconds of him fighting Uriah Hall. Dude, it's just, his hands have to weigh 10 pounds. He's got 10 pound hands that he's just fucking digging into Uriah Hall's body, just blasting him, you know, in the side of the head. I mean, just honestly sickening shots. Like refs need to be on their game when Paulo Costa's fighting, because if we have any fucking Mario Yamasakis out here who let some of these fights go a little longer, Paulo Costa might fucking kill a guy. You know what I mean? Like, his power is something else. And then obviously, you know, he's a black belt in BJJ, so, you know, I don't see this fight going to the ground at all. But maybe he tries to clinch or something, or, you know, maybe he does try to take it to the ground at certain points in the fight. I think that would be an interesting dynamic. So, I don't know, and his striking's not bad either. It's not like he's, you know, swinging wild punches. He's connecting on most of his punches, so, you know, it's not just, oh, power versus precision. I mean, at a very general level, I mean, yeah, it is power versus precision, but, you know what I mean, Costa still got some precision. Don't get it twisted. On the other side, Adesanya, I mean, crazy to think of the rise he's had. I mean, this is already going to be his second time going out here to defend the title. Obviously, the last one with Yoel Romero was a complete stinker. I don't know. I see a lot of people saying, like, oh, that was like, yeah, that fight sucked, but like, oh, like 80% of the 80% of the fault for that fight sucking was on Yoel Romero. I mean, you know, Israel is a counter striker. You can't expect, you know, Israel can only fight when people walk blindly towards him. He's a counter striker. What do you expect? Yeah, not really, man. Like, you know what I mean? The blame is more like 55-45 Romero. You know what I mean? Adesanya still made that a boring fucking fight. I mean, you could hide behind the fact that he says he's a counter-striker, and nobody would deny he's a counter-striker, but, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ, it was fucking boring. Now he won, that's the only thing that matters, but, you know what I mean, whatever. I mean, that was one fight. We all got duped on that one. I do think this one will be much better. Paulo Costa said he's not going to chase him around the octagon, but, you know, I don't know. I do think Paulo Costa will bring that forward pressure, and I do think that there will be a lot of action in this fight for as long as it lasts, because, I mean, I don't know. When there's a lot of heavy action, it might not last very long. I don't, you know, profess to say that this is going to be, you know, a fight that gets stopped in the first or second round, but, I mean, you know, shit, anything's, as Kevin Garnett says, anything is possible. But Adesanya, I don't know. I mean, he's got a very significant reach advantage in this one. I think it's like 6 or 7 inches. So that's, I don't know, that only kind of furthers my point that Paulo Costa is going to have to get in the pocket and kind of chase him down. But, you know, he's got to find safe ways to do that, because, you know what I mean, you don't want to, I mean, that's a recipe. If Israel does win, it's going to be a lot like him beating Robert Whittaker, where, you know, he was firing off of his back foot and firing a winging hook and knocks out Whittaker. You know what I mean? Because you can do that when you're tall as shit and got super long arms, and, you know what I mean? Again, he is a counter-striker, but I don't know. I do think Costa's going to win this one. It's, you know, I could give you some reasons like I have, but it's also more of a feeling. I just think Costa's ready to be a champion. I think Israel, I don't know, he's really changed. He's really changed over his last couple of fights. Yeah, Israel's kind of a fucking douche. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's kind of cool when he was coming up and, you know, once he won the belt, but I don't know, his lead up to the fight with Romero, the fight with Romero, the excuses, you know, he's changed. In 2020, he's just a guy who makes excuses, has lame anime fucking references. Anime's fucking stupid. If you're a fan of anime, please don't tune into this show, okay? Anime, yep, that's my alarm. Anime's fucking dumb. It's for children and for people who like to do stuff with children. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Israel, why are you wearing that shirt? Oh, well, you see, this is the shirt from this stupid fucking Japanese TV show that's for fucking children. And this was a character who was really strong, but was going through some trouble, and, you know, you overcame the trouble. Yeah, I don't fucking care about your t-shirt, dude. It's a fucking lame t-shirt from a fucking children's cartoon. I don't fucking care, you weeb. I don't care. So that's kind of annoying. He's annoying. I really hope Paulo Costa knocks him out. I think that would be absolutely hilarious. I would love to see that. I would love for him to no longer be champion, so I don't have to see him, you know, just being lame. That's really all it is. Excuse making and just, you know, he's the king of cringe. Everybody talks about Henry Cejudo being the king of cringe. No. That's a shtick. Israel's is legit. He's just cringe all the time. You know, and he's not even trying. That's just who he is. At least Henry Cejudo, when you like listen to when he went on Joe Rogan's and he's just being Henry Cejudo the guy. Ah, Henry seems like a really cool guy. You know what I mean? Like lived a pretty interesting life. You know what I mean? Probably a guy who you know, you could get some beers with. Like seems like a cool dude. But he's just cringy, you know, to get headlines. You know what I mean? That's a character. No, there's no character with Israel Adesanya. He's just cringe. You know what I mean? So, I don't know, man. The Chad Paulo Costa is going to beat the cringe Israel Adesanya. He's going to make Skinny Pink cry. He's going to make Skinny Pink cry. I really believe that. This is the last championship fight here for Runner Sanya. You know what I mean? Paulo Costa, he's going to put a beating on them. And, you know, listen, wrapping up the fight talk here, I mean, I'd be lying if I said there wasn't sexual tension here between Paulo Costa and Israel Adesanya. I mean, even just a little bit. Now, it might be a little more than a little bit, but, you know what I mean? Even just a tiny bit. I mean, I don't know. You listen to some of their interviews, it's getting a little interesting. You know what I mean? If there was one more, luckily, obviously, we're on the eve of the fight here, but if there was one more press conference, we might have another moment, you know, where Jon Jones is telling Daniel Cormier he's going to be his wife for the night. I mean, we might have had that with Paulo Costa and Israel Adesanya if there was one more press conference. You know what I mean? We just needed a couple of more interactions, and this would have happened. So there's something weird going on between these guys. But I'm excited for the fight. Should be a good one. With that, we'll wrap it up here. So, again, main card showdown, that'll be, today, because it's 12:03 in the morning. So, yeah, we'll have that on Twitter. I'm going to beat Drew Peterson again, you know, the fireman. You know, he's going to get demolished. He's going to get extinguished. You know what I mean? He brings nothing to the table. I bring to the table utter domination. And, you know, I'm going to prove it again. So, again, you can follow me on Twitter at Owen Ely MN, North Star Sports on Twitter at North Star MIN. Got to check out the website at northstarsports.media. And thanks for tuning into the show, everybody.